Hello and welcome to the science fiction... Hello and welcome to the Ursula K. Le Guin book review podcast. My name is Luke Burge and this is the show where I review every single Ursula K. Le Guin science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish an Ursula K. Le Guin science fiction book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to be talking about The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin.
We are.
I last read this book in 2009. It says here, what's that? Yeah, so of October 2009, I give it 4.5 stars. Hainish Cycle, number 4. Juliana also remembered that she reviewed it.
Yes.
Can you read out your review on Goodreads of Ursula K. Le Guin's Left Hand of Darkness?
So I read it in 2015, 2016, and I wrote a review in 2016, and I can't remember writing this review.
Yeah.
At first, it was a bit slow and confusing, especially the names of places and people. But then exactly in the middle of the book, it really picks up. And when it's just the journey of the two characters, it becomes a really absorbing book. Perfect 4-star book.
A perfect 4-star book.
Yeah.
That is quite funny. No, I do say, oh, just in case anyone's, we are still on holiday. We are still in a hotel room.
Yes.
In Ljubljana.
Laying in bed next to each other.
We're not laying in bed next to each other. We're sitting up in bed. And facing a very echoey wall.
Yes.
So if the audio quality isn't fantastic, we're doing the best we can with our little vlogging microphones here. Yes. So let's talk about this. Why did I read this book? Now, if you're listening to this in more than a week's time, you can look at your podcast player and you'll see that the next episode in the Science Fiction Book Review podcast is one that's called the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, or the SFBRP Must Read Science Fiction List, or the Masterworks List, or the, what do they call it, the canon? Can't remember. We're going to come up with a good name.
We haven't actually found out a name yet.
But someone said, hey, what you should do is make a list of like all the books that you should read to get like a good overview of what science fiction is,
yeah,
from the point of view of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. Like, what is your masterworks list? What is your must-reads list?
Yeah.
And spoilers, we already recorded that podcast because we did that before we set off on our holiday. So you've had this podcast sitting there. But I was like, yeah, this is now a good opportunity to read through or to read some books which are either on that list for sure or maybe could be on that list of books in the future.
Yeah.
Or I just want to, I haven't read and reviewed for a long time. And so there's so many books that I've probably read like 15 years ago, which could still make it into the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, but my opinions have changed, or what science fiction is has changed, or maybe just sort of like, you know, maybe they've been replaced by better books or whatever, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Not replaced by better books, but would other books would be more worthy to be on a must-read list than that book. So I went back, knowing this is the case. Let's check out The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Did you also go back and listen to the old podcast?
No, I don't, because I don't like the old science fiction. But like, I don't think anyone should go back and listen to Science Fiction Book Review podcast from more than about 10 years ago. I think there should be like a rolling cutoff point. I mean, they're there in the feed. They're in the archive feed. But really, what the Science Fiction Book Review podcast is, it should be like the last 100 or 150 episodes.
Okay.
Because the person who was reviewing books back then isn't, I mean, it's me. It was me at the time, and
yeah,
it was us if it was the two of us talking about a book.
Yeah.
Because you've been a part of the podcast since like 2012 or something, so for the last 12 years now.
Quite a while.
Quite a long time now. I went back and clicked on it here, and it's the episode list. And this was before I ever started listening to audiobooks.
Yeah.
You know, number 68.
There's
no picture. I started taking photos of me holding up the book. What, in like episode like 72, I think it is the first time I've got a what's this one? All right, and now I'm clicking through here. Yeah, look, and I listened to the I read The Dispossessed as well by Ursula K. Le Guin soon afterwards, you know. So I don't know when the first time it was when I took a photo of me as the album art and put that in there as well, but yeah, I thought it was around about 76 or something. Yeah, fantasy. Yeah, it was before I even read Oh, before I even reviewed fantasy as part of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast.
Okay.
So I'm a different person in 2009. I'm a different person now than I was in 2009.
Yeah.
You know, I even wrote a song in 2010 called Hello, what is it? Future Luke.
Yeah.
Hello, Future Luke, how is life in 2020? You know, and it's sort of like addressing myself as a different person. So I don't know. Like, again, so a book has to, will a book still hold up 15 years after I read it the first time?
Yes.
Or the last time.
And
yeah, I think, had I read it before? I couldn't remember. Again, haven't gone back and listened to it. But I did give it 4.5 stars.
So this book.
What book?
The Left Hand of Darkness.
The Left Hand of Darkness, yes.
Do you feel like it has held up?
Honestly, I think it's a masterpiece of science fiction. It, because it's doing stuff. This is written in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't know. It's weird to say this because I was just, beforehand, I was like, let me look at my notes. Turns out, didn't make any notes about this either.
Again
as well. But look at these reviews. So here is Lamoureux/Chez gives it 5 stars as well. Maybe it wasn't that one as well. Oh, Richard gave it 5 stars. You can read the synopsis, so I won't bother here. It doesn't matter. I was going to say, oh, look, Simon says, Luke's review on the SFBRP got me keen to give this book a try, and he gave it 5 stars, and did that as well.
Oh,
but
wow.
Anyway, Carlix rated it a masterpiece. But what I'm trying to say is, look, I could go through what the book is about, or I could talk about the plot of the book,
yeah.
But the joy of the book, the masterpiece, the what makes this a masterpiece is that the story isn't very complex. And what's going on isn't very complex. But what it is doing, it's using the language and how well written it is to rewire your brain into a different way of thinking via exposure to the stuff in the book. I now say the book is about this, or this is what happens in the book, or these are the characters in the book, or this is what's going on in the book,
yeah.
Again, I'm not trying to do a cop-out so I don't have to actually say all of that, because I will talk about it. But what great science fiction does is, by exposure to these different ideas and by immersing yourself in a world where there's different technology or different society or different biology or different culture or all the different things that you can get to in a science fiction book, either
yeah.
by it's Earth, but some one invention comes along and changes it, you know. But this kind of science fiction is you're just exposed to a different society and a different culture and a different form of humanity that allows you via just new words coming in, like your review that you just gave there.
Mm.
Like for the first half of the book, you don't really know what's going on. The viewpoints are switching around.
Yeah.
Like, because there's this Genli or whatever his name is, depending on the pronunciation of the book, is just, he's an envoy. So he's not an anthropologist, because a lot of these Hainish cycle
yeah.
books is anthropologists going elsewhere. But he's an envoy, and he's coming from the Ecumen, which is like the Hainish kind of, you know, a galaxy-spanning information network
yeah.
via the Ansibles, where they share information, share problems, and, you know, problem-solving together, whatever it is. So Genli comes into this place. But so he is just then in this society. But we don't get when he arrives. The story picks up when something interesting is about to happen.
Yeah.
And what he's been doing, he's been living there for 1.5 years on this other planet, waiting to talk to the king of Karhide, and he's just waiting. He's just like,
yeah.
Oh, I need to do this thing, and I've gotten in with the prime minister or the chancellor or whatever it is, and I just need to talk to him. So, and that's where the story starts. So it starts with someone who's already had 1.5 years exposure to what it's like to be there,
mm-hmm.
and knows how to speak the language, and has picked up, you know, this and that, you know, and all these different kind of stuff. But after 1.5 years, he still doesn't actually understand what's going on.
Yeah, like we do.
And you, and as no one as the reader, we also don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's put into a place who knows, like, all of the stuff that you would normally get from, like, like, when you're reading a science fiction book, it's so easy for the author to just write, now, here's an info dump, right? That's how it is. And
yeah.
now let's have an adventure in that. Whereas this book, it's sort of like, here's stuff going on, but is that how it is? This is how Genli thinks it is it is going on.
Yeah.
But is it really? And it turns out, no, it isn't. He doesn't know what's going on. And like I say, that's the greatness of a novel, which allows you to be, again, not even immersed, but like viewing something from a point of view who doesn't have all the information. And then suddenly at one point it skips over and the viewpoint changes, but it doesn't say, and now we are switching to the other point of view in this thing. It just goes over and you're like, oh, now I'm in someone's alien's point of view. And then this person is looking at the person who doesn't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
But they also don't explain their history. They don't explain all of what's going on. It's just sort of like, it's that kind of like, we're just picking up now. Here we are now.
Yeah.
And we're just going on with it. And you're like, oh, right. So this is, it's like being thrown into the deep end three times over. And then as soon as you like swim out of the deep end, you're like, oh, it's deeper over here. And and I know it's so weird to talk about it because I could just say what the plot was. I could just say what this is. But the joy of this book is being immersed in something and going, wait, what? And I've read this book before, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
This is my second, maybe third time. Again, I can't remember how many times I've read it. But like, what's so affecting about it is that these, you know, you get these two characters and one of them is alien and the other one is alien. Because the alien is the envoy and he's alien
to the alien.
He's alien because he's the one odd, he's the odd one out. So to everyone around, he's alien. Mm. But also he's in this world where everybody's alien, like non-human, and even generally isn't baseline human. He's like ecumen, heinous human, like far future, like every single planet that's colonized, they like change the genetics in a certain way.
Yeah.
So everyone's got that going on. But then, yes, down on the planet of winter, because it's very cold, so when they arrive, they call it winter. But then it's called Karhide, or is Karhide just one of the... Gethin is the local name of the planet that they're on.
Yeah.
So Gethin and Karhide is one of the countries there, or one of the empires or nations there.
What I always find so good by in books of Ursula K. Le Guin is that by writing these books and the way she does, she's teaching you, or like she's showing you what empathy and what it means to be an outsider in a society where you come from your own society, so you think certain things will surely be the same, of course, because that's just like, it can't be other ways. And so you get immersed in these stories of people coming to places where they have to really learn to accept that their way of thinking is different to the place that they are, and then slowly understand what's going on. And you, as the reader, you go through the same steps along with them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true. And this is the thing, because everyone is just... Because an hour and a half. It's like a year and a half into Jenna's arrival as an envoy. Because he already knows all of the words, like he's not struggling with vocabulary. He's not struggling with like grammar. He's not struggling with that. But what he's struggling with is that all of the concepts that are different. Mm. And it reminds me of like someone going to America, or, you know, Americans coming to England.
Yeah.
Where they... It feels like, oh, you know, what is it? The two things, like two countries divided by a common language, you know.
Yes.
It's sort of like, well, you think everything's the same, because why wouldn't it be the same? Because we're all speaking the same language.
Yeah.
But the underlying foundations of what the society is built on is so different that you don't even understand what you don't even understand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, now a bit of a short detour. Yesterday we went into a restaurant.
Yeah.
It was an Italian restaurant in Slovenia. And we sat next to a table where two young Americans were sitting.
Yes.
And then later on, earlier, there were two older German people sitting next to us. They then left. And then another young French couple arrived.
Yeah.
And we were sitting in between. So because the way I am, I can't help myself but notice things. So I was sitting there. The American couple asked the waiter for her recommendation on the wine, on the food, on anything.
Yeah.
And then... The American guy, he ordered himself a steak. And the way he was eating the steak was so weird. Most of the time, he was just having his fork in his one hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Americans cut things differently with the knives and forks.
So every time he wanted to cut the steak, he had to then put the fork into the other hand, do the cutting, and then put the knife down again, change the fork, eat the one with... He did his whole meal mainly one-handed, except for when he had to cut the meat.
Welcome to then, noticing how Americans eat.
The French couple next, that on the other side, she was like, how is the wine? And so they were wanting to order wine, and then the red wine, and then was, okay, the Merlot. And what's the temperature of the wine? And he said, oh, it's is it cold? She asked, is it cold? And he said, no, it's not cold. It's normal temperature.
Yeah.
And then, like, in the kind of the details that they asked,
the French people had a way higher opinion of the food.
And then she asked, the duck, is it local? And then he said, yeah, the duck is fresh from the river.
It's like, and the waiter was just doing his bullshitting, like, as a waiter will just make shit up just to be entertaining as a waiter.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But anyway, it was really interesting to just sit there and then observe people from different cultures just coming into a restaurant in Slovenia, in a different country to their own, and then bringing their own ways into it.
So here's the thing. Imagine that situation.
Yeah.
But if you ask the wrong question about the duck, you get put in a gulag.
Yeah, exactly.
that's the kind of system that you're working here. You don't even know what you do. You don't even know the
what
things
you don't know. That
we're asking. And so let me, because I thought this was... someone here as well. This is from Lamora. This is what I wanted to say from Lamora's
the
review.
It's a review from a Goodreads list.
From a Goodreads friend.
Okay.
It says, Genli I is unable to understand the Karhide custom of Skiftgrafor, a Genthian system of politics and social decorum that allows the preservation of status and pride through carefully worded conversations. The word Skiftgrafor derives from the old word for shadow, and Genli I understands it exactly as a shadow strewn across every face, seemingly obscuring their true intentions. What Genli is slow to understand is that for shadows to exist, so must light exist. You know, the left hand of darkness is light. You know what I mean? Yeah. Somebody else, it's actually here. Light is the left hand of darkness, and darkness the right hand of light. Two are one, life and death, lying together like lovers in Kemah. Like hands joined together, like the end and the way. It's the whole idea. And this book rewires your brain to be to get to the point that in every action, there are two things. Mm. There is the visible action, and then there is which is the light. And then there is the non-visible and non-obvious to Genli. Meaning or true intention.
Yeah.
And as it goes through the book, you understand more and more that the other character, whose name I would... Estravan. So Estravan is the prime minister of
the local guy. Yeah.
And as you go through, you understand that Genli has... As you go through the book, Genli has to understand that Estravan is always, everything he says and everything he does, has two sides.
Mm.
But even that isn't made explicit in the text of the book.
Yeah.
You, as the reader, you have to come to that conclusion. There isn't anything that's, again, this is, again, spoiling the reading experience, maybe, but it's like you have to understand that by the end of the book, every action that anybody makes who isn't Genli, there are two things happening there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he meets up with the king, and he meets this person and goes here, and he's interacting with people. And even by the end of the book, he still doesn't understand it until right near the end of the book, some other humans arrive, you know, some of the other people from his spaceship turn up at the end, and they look at him, and he, and I, this is my reading of the book, he isn't fully communicating with them because now he's internalized this
kind of behavior.
This
I think, what you say, it's a mindset or is it a culture or...
Well, it's everything, but it takes someone to think all of that. It takes Ursula K. Le Guin to think, what is the most alien part of this other culture here?
Yeah.
And then write a whole novel which explores that. But she does it in a really clever way, is because most people put this book under. And this is what I did when I, you know, talked about this book in the next podcast. Oh no, I listed this with sort of like a stranger in an ungendered land. Mm. In other words, someone turns up and they're in a place and gender works differently.
Yeah. You know?
And she's done that in quite a lot of books, and other people have done it in different stories as well. But that's the, this kind of like bait and switch, this kind of thing, like you go, this is a book about generally turning up and he's a man and everyone around him is like androgynous, like it doesn't have a gender all the time until once a month. And suddenly, if they're in close proximity to someone else, they suddenly develop a gender and then they have sex, or they each express an opposite gender, so they can immediately have sex with each other, and whichever one's the woman at the time, so it's normally the younger one is the one who's, you know, it turns into a woman, and she can go on and give birth and then revert back to being
non-gendered.
Yeah. Although in this book everyone is just listed as he, but then they're like, Jenny's like, he was very womanly at the time, and was, you know, whatever, the strength for the woman, or like, and it's somebody who can't quite understand that actually, no, you can't keep projecting what you think is womanly onto somebody and calling that a negative, and then projecting what you think is manly onto someone and thinking of it as a positive.
And I find this so fascinating. When was this book written?
1969.
This is amazing. Like this kind of mindset and writing these stories.
But my point is that's the kind of thing that makes people think, now we're on an alien planet.
Yeah.
But actually, it's this other Left Hand of Darkness kind of stuff with the Shithgra floor or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's the thing which is actually more difficult to get your head around.
Yeah.
And if it was just that, if it was just Genly down on the planet and everyone was male and female and everything was the same except for this kind of very subtle thing that's lost in translation for him, but not lost in the words translation, but like whatever. That would be too, well, it would be not obvious and the story would be too boring. So you've kind of got to lead with everyone's of a single gender, or everyone doesn't have a gender, or everyone is both male and female depending on the time of the month, or only at certain times of the month do they express a gender, and then they go back to whatever, and they all live in homes, and, you know, there's not families, and it's all a bit, I don't know, it's all a bit cold. It's a bit Amatka, you know, that
called winter.
Everything's wintry and things. Yeah. And you're like, everyone lives in dormitories. And also sex and getting sex and the gender dynamics aren't a main... drive, that sex drive, that family drive, isn't really there anymore. So it's not about, you know, relationships aren't about having sex and all the other kind of stuff, which is all on the face of it, the more alien stuff. But that is then kind of like a little distraction, like I say, that little bait and switch, and say, actually what's going on here is this other thing, which is dependent on that, but is deeper.
Yeah.
So all of this to say, very good book. Very good book, and even now, it was written in 1969, and we're recording this on the 29th of August of 2024. And so what's that? 65 years later. 65.
I can't do calculations in my head at the moment. I'm too.
My brain is fried. We've been on holiday too long. Anyway, many generations of science fiction and many different golden ages later.
Yes.
This book still works, and I think it still works so well because it's got that depth that you can just say, it's about living in a land where nobody has, you know, the genders aren't the same as normal. If you know what I mean. But that's just a way in. That's just sort of like a funny, like a quirk of writing that is the thing that leads you into the story. But there's more going on. But it's so subtle. And that's the thing. It's so subtle. Like, what's going on here? This Karhide custom of Shithgrithor. It would be so much easier to talk about how, you know, what is the meaning? This is, again, back to this review. Le Guin is aspired to reach a broader question about sexuality instead of being too focused on the meaning of woman, unlike most feminists of the time. In fact, there's a section of the book where the envoy from Earth is asked by a friend of the new planet to explain what a woman is. The envoy, absolutely embarrassed and ultimately fails to offer an answer. And that's so good. Yeah. They're like, oh, what's a woman? And he's sort of like, I've never really thought about it. And you're like, you can't just be an envoy. You can't just be like this core part of your culture where you come from. All right, what is a woman? What is it, what does female even mean? And they're like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's that's I find this so impressive because when we read books like this, and people read and write books like this, they accept that, oh, any sort of gender diversion is alien and it's very like not, you know, not human. And then you start thinking about it and you think like, oh, like there's so much about us humans living on this one planet that can be so alien to one another that we don't even have to go to different planets with different concepts. We have all this on Earth.
Yeah.
Like you can literally take one human from one side of the Earth, taking them to the opposite side of the Earth, and they will have a similar experience to these kind of concepts.
Yeah.
Because we grow up in a culture, we brought up in certain ways, and then we think this is the norm.
Yeah.
And I really like it that in 1968, 1969, she is kind of questioning all this and asking, what is a woman and what does that mean? Is it so weird to have a period of time where you just change your gender?
And yeah,
it's great.
You can only do that in science fiction, though.
Yeah,
that's the crazy thing.
Yeah. And as soon as you do it in reality, people go like, no, you are crazy.
Yeah.
You are.
No, what I'm saying is
like a woman.
If it's in reality, you can't have a nice clean thought experiment about it, if you know what I mean. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Yes. Let me, I'm just going to go through some of these other reviews of friends of mine as well. Lots of people say that while the story and pacing itself felt more like a 3-star novel, I was rarely engrossed and excited by the content. The depth and thought in the story are powerful. Says Le Guin really pushes one's thinking around what a person's physical gender means personally and socially. And lots of other people say, like your review was at the start, it's rough. I can't say, look, this is Glenn Schmetzler. Schmitzler, too many L's and Z's at the end there. I can't say I loved this book at the start, but I was glad I stayed with it. The macro, the first contract, and the micro, the friendship story arcs, tie together nicely, and it felt like a good standalone novel, so I didn't feel so bad not reading the other volumes in the series. Mm-hmm. Honestly, just read this one to begin with. This is totally fine.
Yeah.
Here's one from Austin here. The bit everyone talks about is the ambisexual society, but the brilliance of the book is the quality of the writing. From a gentle travel novel to a brutal episode in a Soviet-style gulag to an epic trek across the ice field, Le Guin makes you really feel it. Mm-hmm. Don't think this is a political book. Think of this as a masterpiece of science fiction. So it is one of those books where, like, again, even this time going in, it starts, and I thought, this is a bit slow. But it really starts picking up. And again, like you say, when it gets down to two people traveling together across an ice field, you think, well, nothing's happening. It's boring. They're just skiing all the time. And yet that is, like, super riveting. And I'm like, oh, right, this is where, once it comes down to just these two people, the alien and the alien alien, the local alien and the foreign alien. Like, once you get down to that, you're like, it really starts singing. It also reminded me a lot of, I was reading one of her short story collections, I can't remember what it was called now, let's go over here and click. Kayla Gwynn, Rukana's World, no, The Unreal and the Real, a short story collection. She's got a story which is like an alternate telling of the first people to the South Pole, and it was a group of women. And I was like, if I look that up, she was probably doing some research about how to trek across the ice.
Yes.
And, you know, that it feels like how to trek across the ice research might have turned up as this, the first people to the South Pole were women.
Yeah.
But didn't want to tell anyone because they didn't want to hurt the feelings of the men who actually got there for the first time.
Yes.
Anyway. Thank you. Thanks for all of my other friends who reviewed this book, gave it 4 and 5 stars here as well. So yeah, loads and loads of people giving it 4 and 5 stars. I'm going to give it 4.5 stars. And again, I think it's only not a 5-star book because it does make you work for it at the start. It is a bit slow. And I kind of wished, well, maybe I don't want it to be more explicit at the end, but I think some of the enjoyment, like some of it's a bit in the air because it's so much about what things have meanings and what's the other meaning and things, and I'm maybe reading too much. And I kind of want it to be not wrapped up nicer at the end, but I just want maybe one other thing that happens.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't mind it being a neat ending,
yeah,
but I wish there would have just been a little bit more for the amount of time that you spend with these people.
Yeah.
Yes, just a bit, I don't know, in some way a bit more.
I understand.
I don't know. But it's difficult to say because it is a masterpiece and it is great and it still holds up
many years later.
And lots of people give it 5 stars and I'm not sure I can give it 5 stars because, again, it was a bit slow and also it leaves me wanting more. But then that is part of what makes a great novel.
Yes.
But also, yes, I don't know. I'm not trying to say, again, I know when I read a 5-star book, it has to kind of make me cry at 1 or 2 points, I guess is what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. Or I must have like a really strong, I feel like I have to have a really strong emotional reaction to it, as well as a like appreciation of the goodness of it. And also like, I don't know, there's an extra step that I need for a novel to get to 5 stars. And this just didn't quite get there. So I'm going to give it 4.5 stars.
That's cool.
Yeah. Uh-oh, Juliana's yawning. No, it's fine. It's fine. We've had a good holiday so far.
Active.
Oof. Very active. And as soon as we've been camping, and as soon as we're in a hotel, we sort of zonk out on these beds and don't want to leave and explore Ljubljana, although we did it twice yesterday. So we've got stuff to do.
We do. Are we taking my 4 stars and your 4?
No, because you didn't read. This is you didn't review.
I didn't read
your
it
review
this time.
Was the 4 lines that you read out at the start of the podcast.
Yes.
You know, your review that you did in 2014 or whatever it was doesn't get to influence 15. The rating. 2015 yeah. Doesn't get to influence the rating here.
Okay, cool. 4.5 stars.
Yes, and sounds good. Definitely in the science fiction book review podcast, must read.
Essential
science fiction must read list of like the 50 novels or whatever we have there.
Yeah.
So that's it. I think about that. 4.5 stars. And thanks to, again, everybody else who's a friend of mine on Goodreads who was also rated it and reviewed it. I read through, you know, 10 different people's reviews before doing this podcast because I didn't make any notes as I went through
again.
It. So yeah, this is it says it's 366 pages. It won the Hugo Award for Best Novel and the Nebula Award for Best Novel. So it's a Hugular Award thing. It also won the James Tripchy Jr. Award for Retrospective. That it won it in 1995, looking back. And also the Margaret A. Edwards Award in 2004. Don't know what that award is for, but it did win.
Cool.
Did win them. Yes.
That's really
and,
nice.
And 4.1 stars on average on Goodreads.
How many reviews is that?
That's based on
ratings?
That's based on 190,000 ratings.
That's very good.
So
a lot of people have read the book.
Yes. That's good. It actually says here, this edition is the 50th anniversary edition.
Hmm.
And that was published in 2010. So, Let's say 65 years old, this book
wow.
is.
Wow. That's very good.
Because I couldn't do...
We just do the stuff
in my head. All right.
Approximation.
That's about it for this podcast. Anything else? Any other news? Anything else we want to talk about? I can't remember.
What's the next book?
Oh, well, the next episode is episode 550. Titled The SFPRP Must Read Science Fiction Novels List. But we'll actually come up with a proper name when I get to post it. Yep. We've already recorded, like I say, and edited. I was just waiting to do these other podcasts. Yes. Oh, the next book that I'm reading, let me quickly have a look here on Audible because it was part of it. The Forever War by Joe Haldeman. And I mentioned this is sort of like books which I've not read for a long time. And if I reread them now, 15 years later, would this book make it onto... This was one of the special mentions or the... I'll have to reread it to see if it makes it onto the list.
Yeah.
Onto the SFBRP must-read science fiction book list in the future.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it's really interesting.
And I'm about half the way through it. And I'm not gonna say if it does read it, but I'm just saying that some books from... when was the Forever War from? It's like from 1974 or something.
Uh-huh.
And a book from 1969 and a book from 1974, you might think, hey, both of these are from the same era. They'll be similar and they'll stand up the same. I just want to say they are not similar and they do not hold up in the same way. But... Either way, we'll talk about that in two episodes' time, The Forever War by Joe Haldeman.
That's cool.
All right, I think that's it for us. I think I've said that's it for me a few times now, but we keep saying other things. You can email me, luke@juggler.net, become my friend on Goodreads, and also head over to the SFBRP Goodreads SFBRP listener group on Goodreads to give episode feedback and put stuff in the books I would like to see reviewed list. But I think what I'm going to do over the next few books is check out more books to see if they are on or off the SFBRP Masterworks list, which is good because it means I'm rereading books which are highly regarded or I've enjoyed in the past or I think are good enough to get in here. So
yeah, it's good. It's so, like on and off. On or off.
On or off the list. Either way, probably worth reading and not just like, ah, oh, damn it, I accidentally read a 1.5 star novel. I think I'm going to go through a phase now of not reading any 1.5 star novels.
Good goal.
I hope.
Nice.
All right, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for reading. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.